It's MRCTV's public service announcement with Brittany Hughes and Eric Shiner.
And welcome to the MRCTV podcast. I'm Eric Shiner.
I'm Brittany Hughes. Welcome back. It's another Wednesday, halfway through.
Another Wednesday, another day of the shutdown, and another day with a guest from Newsbusters.
Yay! I love guests from Newsbusters.
We have Rich Noyes joining us. Welcome, Rich Noyes.
Well, thanks for having me.
Golf clap. And Newsbusters has a new report out this week, and this has to do, again, with media bias. And this one's really interesting. This takes a look at the second year of Trump, and I guess the question is, has anything changed in the media's coverage of Trump in the last year?
Not a whole lot. I mean, we've been doing this since Trump was sworn into office. In the first year, we found ABC, CBS, NBC's evening newscast gave him 90% negative press. That is unprecedented for a new president. There was no honeymoon for this president. Just an extraordinary amount of coverage. They're covering his presidency as if it's some sort of a national crisis.
Well, it is, according to them.
Well, it is, and that's what you get. But so what happened in 2018? Almost exactly the same thing. 90% negative coverage. The numbers were a couple decimal points away from being exact. There was a reduction in the amount of coverage. It went from 99 hours to 87 hours, but it is still an extraordinary amount.
Does that account for the days that Jim Acosta didn't have his press pass? Is that your hours of difference? Of course, you're talking about the big three networks.
Yeah, talking about the big three. But, you know, this is something, I mean, to me, what was most interesting about that is you have this wave of negative press. It is more negative than any president's ever faced. And looking at the polls in 2018, Real Clear Politics had Trump's average at 40% on New Year's Day of 2018. By New Year's Eve of 2018, 365 days later, he was up to 43. So the media, their bark is as loud as it's ever been, but their bite seems to be not very severe.
What are the issues that they're giving negative coverage to? Is there something in particular that they're focused on? I think we've all heard Russian collusion.
Yeah.
Russia.
Yeah.
I feel like it's like a bad episode of the Brady Bunch. I feel like it's all Brady. I ever hear.
It's virtually everything. The Russia probe was the number one story in 2017. For the second year in a row, it was the number one Trump topic by airtime. Since the beginning, it's had over 2,000 minutes on these evening newscasts. That's an extraordinary amount, you know. Most stories never get that in a decade, but you know that was like 98% negative coverage. Immigration was 94% negative. The Kavanaugh Supreme Court battle, 84% negative. North Korea, 80% negative. The Michael Cohen hush money story, which was the number five topic, and an extraordinary amount of coverage. Also, 341 minutes of scandal news on that front. 99% negative. So there's not a whole lot that they're covering of Trump that's positive. They did give him some positive press on the economy, not counting trade, which they can't stand, his trade policies. Economy, I think, was 74% positive, but it amounted to just barely 1 hour out of this 87 hours, not exactly where they're, most of their Trump coverage.
Now, you've been doing this for a long time. Have you ever seen it this consistently negative? I mean, how does this stack up when you look at how the media covered Reagan?
Have you ever seen it even close?
No, it has never been like this before. It has never been at this volume. The, you know, Barack Obama, we know, you know, he was getting mostly positive press. But just in terms of the volume, I mean, about one third of the evening newscasts are about the Trump presidency. Looking at 2015 and 2016, only 10% of the newscasts were about President Obama and his entire team. So this is, we're talking about a tripling of the normal volume of news, ferociously negative. But it's, you know, if the media were as powerful as they think they are, this would have completely collapsed his public opinion. I mean, Trump's polls are higher than, say, President Bush was in his second term, Jimmy Carter was. I mean, presidents who are in real trouble get down in the teens and the 20s in terms of approval rating. Trump has been holding right around 40 for a long time, which means people who are going to be against him are against him, and the people who are for him are not being swayed by all this negative news. It's just, to them, I think they believe it is fake news.
Yeah, I almost think that the news in some ways actually plays right to him because this is something that he's been doing even back during the campaign, right, is this idea that the media is against me, the media you know, perpetuates fake news, all of these, you know, they're going to launch this war against me. So I actually think that, you know, he was kind of smart to take the tack from very early on that they were going to be against him. And so, I mean, it kind of makes sense to me that, you know, as much as they might drive away people that already were going to hate him, they're bolstering those who are already in his camp.
Right. And I think the other thing that's happening, the other dynamic, is Trump is not like a normal politician. He goes out of his way to take jabs at the press. And I think this has created an emotional reaction amongst a lot of reporters where they will go out of their way to then to be adversarial with him. And then you get the effect that helps bolster his base, bolsters their affection for him. So it's been this standoff now for about a year where the press is as vicious as ever, but it's not moving, has not moved public opinion in a very long time.
Now, when you look back, you mentioned how with so much less frequency, the press covered the Obama administration. When you look back at what they did for coverage, what was the percentage, do you know offhand, the percentage of negative coverage that Obama got, even though it was obviously smaller amounts and not as many hours of news coverage?
We didn't do good press, bad press for Obama the way we have with Trump.
Because there really was only one
guy. We
did,
you know, there was a Pew study that basically, you know, they had a different methodology where they also counted neutral stories. We just only counted the positive and the negative statements made by reporters, anchors, experts. But the Pew study looked at Trump as well as other presidents, and they had about two-thirds of Obama's coverage early in his term as positive. And again, if you take out the neutrals, it was about 90%, 93% negative for Trump in the same time period. So I think other researchers, other groups are finding basically the same thing. And I think any casual viewer would know. I mean, the media are not positive towards Donald Trump. You don't need to do the statistics to figure out that it's a very, very negative environment for him, and then watch his reaction. It's not affecting him very much.
Well, I mean, to be honest, I mean, we're the Media Research Center. We know that the media is liberal. We've been, especially you, you've been involved in documenting this for quite some time. In fact, I'm going to bring this up. Rich is so old school. You think that there might actually be a flash drive or an external hard drive with the files of all
floppy disk.
A floppy disk would be better. I walked into Rich's office the other day, and there's stacks of paper with letters and numbers on them, and I didn't know what they meant at the time. And, I mean, all over his office, stacks, piles. And I said, Rich, what the heck is this? It was this report that he's talking about. He had verbatim transcripts of all the evening newscasts for the entire year from all the big three, and he went through and marked the stories, how long, if it was a
sentence by sentence. Yes, 186 hours of coverage does add up to a lot of paper when it's printed out.
Google Docs,
and
Rich.
It's hard to
Google
get around.
Docs. I recommend Google Docs.
I will say, though, that for those of you who don't follow Newsbusters, you really should, because I've always said what I appreciate so much about y'all is that you watch all of this crap so that we don't have to, which is really it's really quite nice, actually. Like, there are many times where, you know, the last time I flipped over to MSNBC, because, like, sometimes I can kind of stomach some of the other stuff, at least to know what they're saying, you know, because that's
right,
important.
Right, no, it's important to know what the other,
you know,
side
you shouldn't
saying.
Just, you know, box yourself into your own little echo chamber. But the last time, I actually remember my husband told me, he's like, you should watch some MSNBC and just kind of see what they're saying, because, you know, to know what to talk about. I was standing up in my living room, almost throwing things at my television at one point. And so it's quite nice that y'all actually keep track of all this stuff so that we don't have to sit and listen to it all day. It's wonderful.
Well, I appreciate that. I mean, we've got a lot of,
and also, I'm sorry,
good analysts and, you know, Curtis Houck, Scott Whitlock, Kyle Drennan, Nick Fondacaro, Bill D'Agostino, they're all watching this all day long. And yes, they will be yelling at their TV sometimes as they hear things. So it's the way we are now.
Because another thing that I think is interesting to point out is, you know, it's one thing to just say that, you know, a certain percentage is negative and a certain percentage is positive. Can you talk a little bit about, when we say negative, we're not just talking about critical. We're not just talking about, well, you know, here's maybe a hole that can be punched in something that Donald Trump said, or here's maybe another angle. Or I think what is mind-blowing to me, even 2 years now into this administration, is the consistent amount of hyperbole when it comes to the negative coverage. It's not just, we're going to speak truth to power, we're going to ask the tough questions. It's, racist and the xenophobic and the anti-American and these words that get thrown out there by pundits and by, I mean, you know, and sometimes if the anchor himself doesn't want to say it, they'll bring on these guests and they'll let them say it. And and they never contradict it. So, I mean, when we're talking about negative coverage here, we're not just talking about critical coverage. We're talking about really extreme stuff sometimes.
Some of it is just ordinary critical. But again, how much of it is on topic A and topic B? I mean, the, you know, the scandals, I think there's no question those are negative topics for President Trump. The economy is an excellent topic for President Trump. Even reporters who don't like him give him credit for rejuvenating the economy in a way that President Obama could not over 8 years. But again, look at what we had last year. We had, you know, over 1,000 minutes on Russia and the Cohen scandal. We had 74 minutes on Trump's handling the economy. So it's a, what is that, a 12 to 1, 13 to 1 ratio. It's skewing their news priorities to these negative topics. The public, I think, usually always tells pollsters that the economy is the most important issue for them. That's not where the media are going. They're looking to the what they think is the political chink in the armor where they can most bring down this president. And then, yes, it's accumulating the guests, accumulating the sound bites, going over the same facts over and over again if they think it is sort of building a narrative. It's a lot like the tactics of a negative political commercial where, you know, you may take a truthful statement and just hammer one and ignore the other until you sort of create this impression that someone is the boogeyman. And this is what the press has been doing for, you know, really going back to the 2016 campaign, and it's just carried with it into the presidency. But it's not how they treated any other president, not Republicans and certainly not Democrats.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, if you look at it, if it were truly about scandals, which I think the media, I mean, that's great for the media, you know, I mean, it's not great for the country, but I mean, the media loves a good scandal, right? They always have.
Well,
but if it were really about scandals and if it were really, or if it were really about, you know, stories that needed investigating, you would have seen much more of that with Obama. I can name a dozen things off the top of my head that I feel like we never got to the bottom of because the media just wasn't interested in finding out, which is baffling to me as a former investigative reporter, how you can have something that you just decide not to look into
right.
because of somebody's politics.
And the media would belittle Republicans trying to investigate these things as being on some kind of a witch hunt. Oh, there's that word again. But we also had a Democratic president 20 years ago who had an independent counsel investigating him and eventually led to an impeachment. The media coverage of the Starr investigation was mostly about how awful Ken Starr was, not about Bill Clinton's conduct. You know, here, Robert Mueller, the investigator in the Trump case, has been immune to negative press. 20 years ago, when it was a Democratic president, it was all about the investigator.
It was where the focus was.
You can
that
just
the
see
difference.
The two Absolutely. Different standards with two different presidents of two different parties.
One thing I want to touch upon, to add to what Brittany mentioned, is when you're talking about negative coverage, you're talking about true negative coverage. There are some parameters for this study, and they're actually fairly stringent. I mean, one of the things that I noticed in the study is, you know, if someone has a Democratic operative on as a guest and they say something negative about the president, that doesn't count as negative coverage because you expect that.
Right. I mean, you know, the partisan back and forth is not journalism.
So that's not part of the negative
right.
percentage.
Republicans saying that Trump is great, Democrats saying that Trump is awful, that's not journalism. It's when the reporter weighs in, when the anchor weighs in, when they go to get man-on-the-street interviews and they weigh in, when they go bring in experts. That's where the journalism sort of adds a spin element to their play-by-play of the day. So we're not counting the partisan back and forth. We're counting what journalism adds to it. It's yielded over 10,000 statements that can be, you know, explicitly defined as positive and negative. We're just using the normal definitions that come with the English language to tell you whether something's positive or negative. And it's been, again, 2 years in a row, massive amounts of coverage, 90% negative. No president's ever had to face coverage like that before. And my guess is, you know, either this is a new trend or never again.
At this point, is it a self-fulfilling prophecy? I mean, will it keep continuing? Are they angry? Because, as you mentioned, if they're as powerful as they think they are, Trump should have been destroyed by now. He should have been impeached. He should be gone. He should be ineffectual. But that's not the case. So it almost seems like they're getting angry about that. So it's actually getting worse.
That, and I think they're in so far, it's hard for them to back off. I mean, one of the things that was interesting about this is we looked at Gallup. Gallup's been polling for two generations now on trust in the media. Democrats have never been more fond of the media than they have been the last 2 years. 70-71% of Democrats say they trust the media a lot. That's because the media are telling a fundamentally Democratic story. Republicans, 2016, 2017, and 2018, have been the lowest marks ever given. They think the media is completely untrustworthy. And I think it's because, yes, as the media get more and more partisan, you get these partisan reactions from the public. I don't think that's good for journalism. I think that's cementing them as much more partisan. They should be trying to recover their reputation as objective umpires, but they're moving the opposite direction.
Now, we're not going to date you, but having covered this for a number of years, do you see it getting worse before it gets better?
Probably. I think the media are becoming more and more niche players. You know, they're not reaching the vast audiences that they used to. They're reaching people who like what they're selling. You know, MSNBC and CNN are clearly in the anti-Trump business, the way MSNBC was in the pro-Obama business beforehand. So I think they're going to be playing to their smaller and smaller audiences, and they won't be able to risk getting too far away from where their audiences are, or else they'll lose viewers, lose audience. And there will not be this sort of media that we used to know that spoke to the broad country as one. It's going to be speaking to small subgroups of audience and telling them what they want to hear.
And of course, people, when you find out more about the sport, they can check it out on newsbusters.org. Another interesting thing in the media about playing to a select audience and maybe not doing the research before you decide to talk to your audience.
You're going to bring it up,
story.
Aren't you?
Yeah, well, you did this story the other day on David Webb. Tell us a bit about it, Brandon.
Oh, my goodness. So for those of you who don't know, if you live under a rock or if you've never tuned into Fox News or SiriusXM or anything. So David Webb is... he's a radio host. He does a lot of things, actually.
He's
a Fox News contributor.
Yep.
And by the way, he's black, which is an important factoid in this story because apparently one of his guests that he brought on did not know that and just totally put her foot in it. This is one of those things that, like, you know, when you're, it's kind of like a train wreck, like you can't stop watching, but you kind of want to look away, but you can't. It was like that. It was like nails on a chalkboard, cringeworthy. So he had on a CNN analyst, Areva Martin, who just absolutely loves to play the race card, just absolutely loves to do it. And I guess she didn't really.
Unlike other CNN
analysts. She's black, too.
Yeah, but unlike other CNN analysts, she likes to play the race card.
Well.
That makes her...
there's a reason why.
Oh, it makes her
maybe
same
bring
as
her
everyone
on.
Else on CNN. All right.
You know, just kind of par for the course there. But no, she went on his radio show and... Again, did not realize that he was black, and he was trying to make the point that when it comes to getting hired for jobs, he has always felt that his qualifications and his expertise and his skills are what are important, not his skin color. So he was kind of arguing against the diversity for diversity's sake, and you have to hire X number of black people or X number of Hispanic or whatever. And he was saying, really, it should come down to your qualifications. Well, she... came back at him and said...
Wait, hold on. Let's play the clip.
Oh, my goodness.
I never considered my color the issue. I considered my qualifications the issue.
Well, David, you know, that's a whole nother long conversation about white privilege and things that you have the privilege of doing that people of color don't have the privilege of.
How do I have the privilege of white privilege?
David, by virtue of being a white male, you have white privilege. This whole long conversation, I don't have time to get into.
Areva, I hate to break it to you, but you should have been better prepped. I'm black.
And there it is.
So you see how just painful this is, that she clearly didn't realize she was talking to a black man. And he goes on. You can actually, if you go to mrctv.org, we've got an article up about it, and you can actually listen to the full audio. It's,
yeah,
it's several minutes long.
Yeah.
Because he goes on to just decimate her entire argument. He's like, look, first of all, you just completely showed your butt by accusing a black man of white privilege. But secondly, it's so obvious that this is a term that you just throw out there and it doesn't have any meaning because you're willing to toss it out there on the assumption that someone is white And has therefore clearly enjoyed white privilege.
And that's why they've had a career that's been successful and whatnot. That's what they're arguing about in David Webb's case.
Exactly. And it's just, I mean, it was absolutely hilarious. It completely just rips the entire facade off of this whole, you know, white privilege nonsense, which I've never really understood. If I have white privilege, I can't list a single time that I feel like I've ever enjoyed that.
You come with this assumption and you go to white privilege. David, that's actually David, insulting.
It is, and I apologize because my people gave me wrong information. They told me
the whole white privilege thing is insulting.
David, can I apologize and correct the record?
I don't know. It was so painful, but in such a good way because it exposes how ridiculous that argument is, and the fact that the left, I think, I'm old enough to remember back when, I mean, the left and Democrats, like they were kind of sane. Like, I, you know, didn't necessarily agree with all of their policies, but like they were kind of sane. Well, and you know, now you've just got, you know, everything is racist. If you don't like it, it's racist or it's xenophobic or it's, you know, it's something ist or phobic. And I think that you got a really prime example of this and just the assumption that, oh, well, you know, I guess you sound white, you must be privileged. That's their new tactic. It's not arguing based on ideas and facts anymore.
Yeah, I really like the fact that David Webb didn't let her off the hook. I mean, she wanted to apologize and he let her apologize.
And then she blamed her people, by the way, if you didn't hear that. She blamed her. She was like, oh, my people gave me wrong information. Like, you couldn't have Googled the guy that you were going to be talking to. It was her people's fault.
But it's her fault for making that assumption. And like you said, and that's the thing that David Webb didn't let her off on.
And this is part of the problem with driving a narrative around a construct like white privilege. Privilege is one thing where applied wealth, economy, various social factors, but not necessarily determined by color of skin.
I thought it was hilarious. Apparently so did everybody. It was all over Twitter yesterday. It was really funny. It was because you just love it when they get caught in their own game. And it's laughable and it would be more funny if it weren't what we're actually facing in society these days. And the almost the level that you have to argue with these people or debate with these people on, it's no longer about competing ideas or data or facts or information. It's about name calling. And again, this hyperbole that we see over and over again, these immediate assumptions that people jump to. And I think people are getting sick of it. I really do. And going back to where we kind of started this whole podcast, I really feel like those are things that they play right into Trump's wheelhouse and they play right into his supporters because people are so sick of stuff like that. They're so sick of being called every name in the book simply for wanting things like stronger immigration or border enforcement or, you know, they're so sick of the leftist agenda in the media that we've seen for years. I mean, the Media Research Center has been in existence for over 30 years documenting this stuff, and it's been going on for even longer than that. I think people are just, they're tired of it. They're so tired of it. So
Rich is sitting here silently. Let's get Rich's take on this.
Yeah, no, I think it's one of the things that Trump weighed in on in 2015. I think it surprised a lot of people that he was managed to ride that wave all the way to the White House. But when you think about it, you've had this sort of elites of both parties and the media are part of the elite in this country, having a conversation and never including average citizens. I think the conversation you just talked about shows how ridiculous some of the media people are that act like they are the experts on everything in society. Well, they're not experts on things that, you know, the most obvious things that people should know. And I think it's really undercut their reputation. They should be more humble. That would be a way to dig out of the problem. But instead, they get more arrogant and feisty.
It's like the new Hollywood. They live in their own version of reality or something. And the rest of us just sit back and kind of marvel at it. You know, but yeah, try to take that to corn country, see how it goes over. Probably not very well, I would assume.
And speaking about going over, we're done. We've gone over. We're over our time. We got to wrap up. We thank you for joining us on MRCTV's podcast, Public Service Announcement. Until next week, I'm Eric Shiner.
I'm Brittany Hughes. See you next time.